Okay,
So welcome to my podcast. I'm Sarah. This is Podcast Stronger Than You Think. I have my guest Madeline on today, and we were just talking, and this is the first time we have ever met. We were put together through a mutual colleague and a friend of mine now. I've met her in person, Stacey Lauren, and she created this group that just challenged us to do stuff anyway. So that's what we're doing. And so it's really cool. I have a podcast. I think actually, was it Stacy who said, "Hey, you should get on Sarah's podcast?" Is that how we
I mean, my podcast, she knows my background story, so she knows the things that I've overcome. And she also knows that I have over 100 episodes on my podcast. So I think she just figured we would be mutually beneficial to each other.
Well, that's wonderful. So I thank you for being one of my first of just a few interviews. I have a handful of other like 10-minute little blurbs with me just talking, which is no problem. But this is so exciting getting to know different people. So Madeline, do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure. So currently I am retired, and I moved 3 years ago. I actually retired a little early because working from home was kind of crappy, and I moved during that time and continued to work from home for the same company. But for me, being a manager with a lot of with employees who really felt put upon because I was not working from home. I mean, I was working from home and they had to come into the office a couple days a week. That caused a huge problem. And it was very difficult to not see them face to face and manage them. So I just had it. I'd worked in the finance industry for over 30 years and I was done with it. And so I felt like, I've been working for people who don't appreciate me for a very long time. And so it's time to work for someone who does appreciate me. So, if you can't appreciate yourself, then there's a problem in your life. So that's where I stood when I left. Currently, I'm a podcast host for It's All Creative. I'm also a competitive singer. So, as I mentioned, I'm going away this weekend to an international competition with my quartet, Mood Ring, to compete in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So,
That's amazing.
so we're having fun. We're singing in what we refer to affectionately as the old ladies competition because it's specific to women 55 and over,
Okay.
combined age of 240 between the four of you. So there's just an
Phenomenal.
age qualification. And yeah, we're just doing it because, it's only the third year they've held this contest and we wanted to be on an international stage and put our stuff out there and see what people think. So that's what we're doing upcoming. And
What genre of music, really quick, if that's okay?
Oh, that's an interesting story. It's actually barbershop harmony, so a cappella.
Awesome. Yeah.
We belong to Sweet Adelines International, which is a women's singing organization, and they have choruses all over the world. They just had a new chorus from Bahrain, New Zealand, Australia, Switzerland, I mean Sweden, England, Scotland, all over the US, Japan. Yeah,
That's
it's pretty
incredible.
cool. It's pretty cool. But yeah, so and being a creative person was tough working in 9 to 5 job. So yeah, that was a struggle my whole adult life basically. And at one point right before COVID, I felt like I'd wasted my whole life. And it was really a tough thing to go through. And knowing that I'd gotten a bachelor's degree in theater, but I didn't pursue it, got an MBA and still was trying to make things more creative. I look back after I recovered from that low period and say, I gave a lot of creative methods to the people that worked for me. And so hopefully they took it forward with them and did it, on their own elsewhere. But I have a number of employees that work for me from way back 30 years ago or more, and they still stay in touch with me and, remember fondly all the things that we did together. So even though the final job was kind of not as smooth as I would have liked it to be, I know that I made a mark on people, which is important.
That's incredible. So you got your degree in theater and then you went to finance because that made sense, probably, I imagine.
No, I mean, it didn't. I
Creative.
took a job as a teller. While
Okay.
I was interviewing, I actually was in England on tour with a show, and got a call from a theater camp. They wanted to hire me, and they brought me when I came back to the US. They gave me a tour of the campus and where the program would be running. And at the end, called me into the office and said, "We can't offer you this job because you don't look old enough to take care of the students that are here." So talk about age discrimination, but that was back in, the 80s. So people got
Yes.
away with that all the time. And
Right.
so I started working with a touring company and doing a summer theater program for kids, and I worked in a recording studio, but those were all outside of the job that gave me, health insurance and all that stuff. So, and come to find out, I was actually good at banking. So I stayed in it because it paid well.
That's awesome. Do you ever hear your story? Even to this point, you're like doing sort of that eagle eye view of things that have happened. Do you ever hear yourself telling your story and say, wait, I was doing stuff internationally so fast. That's just so incredible. It's just
I
so
mean, it's
cool.
just where I
Oh,
went.
I'm just, I'm just in this competitive singing thing. Like you're almost glossing over all of these things that for me are like, oh my gosh, my son, our oldest son, sings for the Buffalo Philharmonic. So he's
Cool.
classical singer. And so when you start saying competitive singing, like I totally get it
So I've
because of
probably heard your son sing since I live about 15 minutes from Buffalo.
do you really? Oh my gosh, you probably have then. Yeah, that's oh my gosh, that is crazy. Where do you live? So you're in New
I
York.
actually live on Grand Island, which is a little island in the middle of the Niagara River. So if we walk to the South Point and look across the river, we can see Buffalo.
Oh my gosh. That look at how connected we are even more. That's so cool. Oh my gosh. I'll have to anyways, this is really, really neat. I love it. So yeah, just in like little things I think that you said I'm so impressed. Anyways, I don't know if I'm supposed to, I think I can be. I'm impressed. I'm proud of you. I think it's cool.
Oh,
I'll just
thank you.
done. How about that? I can do it. It's my
Thank
podcast. I can do whatever I want. There's no so awesome. So you decided to step away from corporate because you were not, I mean, this is what I'm hearing. So I'm reflecting back to you. Stepped away from corporate, you weren't being appreciated. So you said, hey, I'm gonna work for somebody who does appreciate me, which is me. So what
Correct.
is it that you do now?
Well, now I did a few things when I first was getting ready to leave because I gave a 6-month notice. I knew that it would take them a while to replace me, which, they didn't, but they certainly turned the job into the vice president role that I should have been given all along. And of course, it was a guy, so let's put all that aside.
Right.
But
Just go blah, and then move on, and we all know what we're thinking.
whatever, so I was gonna do bake. I wanted to run a baking business because I have a food blog that I started during COVID and did a lot of experimentation with baking and just general like canning and all that. And so I did some research because there's a culinary institute near us, and went to talk to them. They're affiliated with SUNY, and so you had to take certain courses, and of course you're paying for them just for a certificate. And I
Right.
was like, you know what? I really don't think I need like a public speaking course. I've spoken and sung in front of thousands of people around the
Right.
world. I don't need this. And I have an MBA in marketing. So why am I, it's not like I need all that. And they were like, well, it's just part of the stuff we do to be affiliated with the university. And I was like, okay. So that's extra money out of my pocket. And, cutting our household income in half, I didn't want to really spend thousands of dollars to get a certificate in baking. After doing research on the challenges of a bakery, which you don't think about initially. Sourcing ingredients and stuff is a big deal. And I've worked for family businesses many times. So, but what do you do with your baked goods at the end of the day when you haven't sold them? You've got to toss them or say them sell them as day old or donate them. And that happens every single day.
Oh,
And
wow.
so, it's like, I don't know that I want to do that because as any standard business, you have to assume you're going to lose money the first year.
Right.
And I can't really not only cut the household income in half, but then take money from it for something. So it didn't make sense for me to do that. And so about a year in, it took me about 6 months to get used to not working. So I binged a lot of TV and sat on the couch. But then I saw the whole podcast thing and started doing that and helping other people and interviewing a lot of business people who also do creative things. And so right now, podcasting is my thing. I've gotten back into canning and baking, possibly doing a cookbook. I started writing again, which I did in high school. So I have a novel almost done, and continue to put more emphasis on my singing and support my wife who got laid off in March. So that was like, okay, this sucks. You know, no one wants to be looking for a job when you're in your 60s. But, you know, she's hanging in there and going on interviews if she can get them. And you know, we're making do. So that's what it is.
Wow, that's incredible. What's your wife's name?
Beth.
Beth. All right. Mm-hmm. Beth, you can do it. We believe in you. There's a shout out for Beth.
Well, she sings with me too, so we have a lot of time.
Oh, cool. I was wondering if she was a singer too.
She wasn't awesome. When I first met her. She was all about, you know, softball and taekwondo because she has a black belt. But she used to laugh at me when I said, come and sing. And then one year she was like, hey, this is kind of fun. And so she's been doing it ever since. Oh, and that was like a long time ago.
That's awesome. So you may, when you're saying the style of singing you do, I don't know. Do you know who the Good Lovelies are?
No.
So that's kind of what I'm thinking of. I think they're a quartet as well. And it's a lot of acapella, like Bugle Boy, you know, the da 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 da.
Yeah. Well, yes. We don't sing that song, but similar to that. Yes. That's very close harmony. There's a lot of science to barbershop harmony, which people like, oh, blah, blah, blah. They don't want to hear about it.
Yeah. My son speaks music. So when he starts talking, I listen as hard as I can, but there are things he says that I'm like, Kai, I have no idea what you're saying. So I believe so much that there's a science to singing.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
I don't understand it, but I love it. I love how excited he gets about it. So that's really
very
cool.
I've been doing it since 1988 with this group, but not this specific. I came out here because there's one of the international champion choruses in Buffalo, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So we sing with a chorus. We have over 80 women that sing in the group. And we came in 13th in the world last year when we competed internationally in Louisville. But a couple of the weird things about barbershop, in case anybody's nerdy like that and wants to hear about it, is it has to do with sound waves and how the chord structure is built. So specific types of chords are used in barbershop harmony. And if you sing them right, which means it can't be just a piano playing it, if it's voices playing it and certain ones of the notes within the chord are sung a teeny bit higher than they would be on a piano, all the voices lock in place and it creates air vibrations that create a high note and a low note or two high notes. So when you hear four people sing, you'll hear actually more voices than just four.
Oh, that's so cool. That's just so cool. Do you guys ever sing?
You know, like when you rub your finger on a glass.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the same idea.
Oh, that's cool. It's funny. Growing up, we would try and like my brother and my dad would whistle. They'd make it warble. So it was that same thing where it was like just this pitch that would make all sorts of things happen at the same time. That's so neat. Thank you for sharing. I love it. That's so cool. So I want to ask you, obviously my podcast is stronger than you think. And you said that you have like so many things that you've survived. And is there something after just our conversation? It's funny. I didn't realize we'd hang out in music for so long, but we did. And it's really cool. You never know what you don't know until you know it. Right. But is there something that you feel like sharing? Is there a story that you have, something you've overcome? I mean, geez, you're supporting your wife right now when she's been laid off and you left, like all these big different things that you've done in just a couple minutes of talking. Do one of those stand out? Is there something else that you're like, you know what? My heart is really at this point for something that I overcame.
Well, I'll tell you what I overcame big time. When I was born, I had so many things wrong with me. Physical, I didn't react to pain and they took me away. I was born in the 50s, so there was not a whole lot of, you know, help for babies that had something wrong with them. And so they rushed me.
By the way, yes. You are blowing my mind with the age you keep saying you are.
I'm 65.
Anyways, you keep saying the 50s and I'm like, no, we're the same age. So anyways, sorry to interrupt, but
good genes. Okay. It's just good genes. That's all. It's
amazing genes. Okay. Awesome. So keep going. So you rushed away.
Yeah, they took me out of the hospital my mom was in and rushed me into Boston to Mass General. And told my parents to put me in an institution and to forget about me because I'd be taken care of in the institution and not to have any more children. So there's one big thing I overcame because my parents were like, nope, this is the child God wanted us to have, so we're keeping her. And so they brought me home.
Wow.
I didn't walk until I was two. They were doing a lot of tests on me. There were some, I can't go into details because I don't remember them, only being five when they happened, but there was abuse issues that went on in the hospital while I was there. Talking to my mom later about it. And she said, well, we figured something was happening, but you know, it was free healthcare. So it's like, oh my God, that was okay to you, but whatever. She had three more children after me. And by the time I was home and learning to walk, they told me and my mom that I would be in a wheelchair by the time I was 18 and that I shouldn't be out running around and I shouldn't be doing dance classes like I did. And so there were a lot of things that my parents put in my control and said, we're not going to choose what tell you what to do and what not to do. We trust you. You're an intelligent kid. I mean, I was reading the funny papers with my father when I was like two or three. And they wanted her to put me in a special class for developmentally disabled children in school. And my parents were like, she can read. Why would we do that? And so my mother asked me, and I'm like, no. I want to learn to read stuff. I want to learn how to do math. I want to. So my parents put my health care and my education kind of in my pocket and said, we'll let you run. We're here to support you. And you do what you do.
Incredible. That's really out of the box thinking, especially, I mean, like it's out of the box thinking now. So then it would have been even more. That's phenomenal.
So I know with my mom, she would always say to me because the hospital wanted to do some tests on me to slow the growth in one leg so that my other leg could catch up. And she asked me because she told at one point I said to her when we came home from a hospital appointment, why do they not talk to me? And I was like 5, 6 years old. I said, why do they not explain things to me? It's my body, not yours. And so she was like, we went in the next time and she said, you need to explain it so she understands because I'm not making choices for her that she's going to hate me for later.
Wow, look at you at like five and six. You're super assertive. They're saying putting you in special classes, and you're like, put me in the special classes with like the 15-year-olds because that's where I am. Like, you want to be special. Wow.
And then, you know, as I went through school, I took drama acting classes, dance classes. You know, I think that in the beginning, I didn't realize, although I do remember the ballet school where the owner and her son were both dancers, and she came over and said, we'll have her in the class. We'll keep an eye on her, what she's doing to make sure she's not going to injure herself, but we'll let her do what she can do. And so I did ballet for a few years, but I cannot balance on my right side at all. So, you know, there's certain moves you can't do when you're a ballerina. And so, but I got to try it. And then I auditioned for the touring company in my 20s and there was tap dancing. And, you know, I was like, I can't do all the steps you're teaching us, but if I do them and make the same sound, are you okay with that? Because really all you care about is the taps you're hearing. And the choreographer said, I want to see what you're going to do. Because the singing, he was like, you're absolutely part of the group because we want your voice in here, but I want to see what you're going to do. So I had to like tap up and down on boxes and stairs and things to show them what I could do. And he's like, yeah, I wouldn't know you weren't doing the same steps. So I went and did it. And I did that for, oh, I don't know, probably like 5 years or more. I was with them doing different conferences and stuff. We would do Broadway review things. So we'd reset up the scenes and things like that while I was a teller at the bank. I was doing all that stuff. And, you know, when I was in college for theater, I didn't really start out doing that. In high school, you know, my parents didn't have any money. And so going to college, I picked a very expensive school to go to. And my parents were like, yeah, we have $100 saved for you. That's what you're going to get. And, you know, even though it was in the 70s then, you know, college for that, you know, if you're in that group is very much an impossible thing. So I wrote to them and applied for scholarships and grants. I got a rehab grant from the state and they paid for it for me to go and study writing. And then once I got in there, I went up to the office and changed all my records to go to theater so I could do theater. And the professor was like, you're not going to get anything on Broadway, you know, because he said, people are going to be so far over you. You need to be doing anything better than them to get considered. So I was like, yeah, that's fine with me. I'm not looking to be on Broadway, but this is what I want to study because it gives you so much confidence, you know, when you're out there and people look at you. So like people who told me I should go into a home and never be seen again and that I was never going to be able to walk. No. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it on stage where people applaud for me when I'm doing it.
That is, it's just so cool. People keep telling, I mean, from the beginning, people are like, this is what you can't do. And you're like, well, not only can I, I'm going to do it on stage. I love that you just said that. I'm going to do it on stage where people applaud for me. That is so incredible. That you just came out just feisty. You're like, I'll show you, world.
Yes.
That's so great. Okay, so keep going. This is so good.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been through that, and obviously there's you know a lot of hardship with that because I had arthritis when I was 11, and when I, you know, I wore metal leg brace, and that was one thing that people remembered about you. You know, like when you go to reunions, and even relatives of mine, they saw me when I was in my 20s and looked at my legs and looked at me and said, "That's you're not you, you're your sister." Because my sister looks like me, but she didn't have the same issues. And so just knowing that that's what people remembered when I was in high school to get my driver's license, which the doctor said I shouldn't have a driver's license because I would be a menace on the roads. And I said to him, people with no legs drive a car. How can you say that I'm not going to drive a car? So I actually went to the hospital, got a letter to tell them what my limitations were, and went to the DMV and to get my driver's license. And they looked at the letter and she's like, "What does this say?" I said, "It says that I have to wear a brace in order to drive." And she looked at me and she goes, she just threw it away. So I was like, okay, so this person's on my side. So I did get my driver's license and went to college, and very quickly in college decided I wasn't going to wear the brace. I wasn't going to wear it at all. And so that meant I didn't have lifts in my shoes because my legs are not the same length. And so, you know, it makes my entire spine out of line. So the bones wear. So I have severe arthritis in my spine and my hips, my hands, my ankles, pretty much everything, my shoulders. And so, you know, you just live with that. You're either going to move forward or you're going to sit and feel sorry for yourself. And that's kind of boring. So I've put up with that. And just keep pushing forward. And I think the important thing is everybody has their own limits. So somebody else who has similar things to me may not be able to push forward. You know, and that doesn't mean they're not as strong. That means they're choosing their boundaries. And I think people choose the boundaries that are given to them sometimes because it's easier to just say, I can't, and not push through, not fail sometimes. You know, it took me forever to learn to ride a bicycle. You know, and I was determined I'm going to do this. Roller skating, oh my God, it was not going to make sense for me because the skates are so heavy and I can't lift my foot. Doesn't flex at the ankle. So finding a way to pick your foot up even higher. So almost like you're marching on that side when you're doing that, but then you can't balance on that side. Oh my God, I went to a roller disco once back in the 70s. And you know, couldn't really stop. I would just kind of like drag myself to a stop, and the floor was about 2 inches above the carpet that went to the bar. And at one point I'm like, let's go get a drink. And I went to skate and I couldn't stop at the end. And I skated right off the floor and right up to the bar. It was like, that looked like I meant to do it
See,
that
look how good I
way.
am. Mr. Brace, I totally meant to do that.
Yeah, it looks cool, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think that being someone, I had a friend when I was in elementary school, and she and I kind of knew about each other because she was, I think, a year or two ahead of me, but she had a very short leg. I think her leg was maybe 6 inches long. And her other leg was normal length. And she wore a very big metal brace that replaced her leg because they didn't have prosthetics back then for kids. And we'd go to gym together. And I will tell you, the gym teachers were not supportive. And so as soon as she took off that leg, she really couldn't do anything, but they wouldn't let her wear it on the gym floor. So she basically had to sit on the floor, and watch the class. And for me, you know, I could take mine off and walk around and be fine, but there were certain things I just could not do, period. And the gym teacher was like, you just have to keep trying. And it was like, okay, this isn't supportive. You're not allowing me to set my boundaries and know myself and say, this is my limit. And then, of course, everybody hates you because you're on their team and they're going to lose because you can't do whatever it is that has to be done, you know? And so those things are kind of like, I'm glad that the world has changed to some extent now, and kids are encouraged to do their best with in whatever way they have to do, you know? And I think as other people, because I don't wear the leg brace and I don't limit myself, a lot of people either don't think it's me if they knew me when I was younger, or think that there's nothing wrong. And so you hear that if it's not visible, then you don't really have anything to worry about. And knowing that, yeah, I do. I drive my car with my left foot. I can't use my right foot to drive, you know? And so there's certain types of hiking that I can't do. That doesn't mean I don't go hiking. I just don't do that, you know? There's stuff that you, as an individual with challenges, now these are just physical challenges. You know, it people that have mental health issues and things like that, it's just as important to let those people make choices on what they can and can't do, and don't question that. It's great to support them, but it's not great to say, oh, you're lying, you're faking it, you should be able to do this, just get up and do it. You know, that's just not okay. And so I think that, you know, I'm open with who I am and what my background involves and where I came from. And some people think, well, it couldn't have been that bad. Look where you are.
Right.
You know?
Interesting. So I'm curious because it seemed, and not seems, from a young, from the time you were a baby, you did it anyways. Like people said, you can't, you'll never, this is where you'll end up. And just like it felt like people just kept throwing boxes on top of you and you were busting through them. Like your white with her black belt, like you were just like, forget it. This is, I'm not going to do that. What was it, do you think, that gave you, I don't know, the strength or the power or the determination to do it when so many didn't believe?
I think one, because both of my parents came from business families, so they worked in business. They, you know, my mother was raised by her grandfather, but they did not have traditional, this is how life is lived, leading. They did not know. My father, you know, was the only son with five girls and a couple other kids that had passed away way back, you know, he was born in the 20s, and they did not have babies and have children growing up under anything. But when you were like five, you're answering the phone for the business. Like, you got to get up and do your thing.
Okay.
So there, my mother was out making deliveries in her teens for her mother's business. And so they were like, you are independent, you make your choices. And they did not have preconceived notions of what a baby would be like. So for them, it was kind of, let's see what she can do. You know, we'll trust. She's got a head on her shoulders, and it seems a whole lot bigger than other kids' heads, but you know, we'll let it go and see what happens. And I think, you know, if I wanted to do something that was dangerous, I mean, I didn't, yeah, I got on a bike. I can remember one day we went, my brothers and my sister and I was the oldest. We all got on bicycles and decided to drive, I don't know, 10 miles or so on our bicycles. And my aunt called my mother and said, you just let them drive like that? You let them ride their bikes all the way across town, across the highway and everything? And she's like, yeah, I mean, if they're not okay, they'll call. If something happens, we'll find out. But you know, they wanted to do it. They're all together, they can take care of each other. And so they didn't set limits like that on us. You know, I never had a curfew growing up. It was just like, you need to come home at certain times. And I did, you know, there was not a question that you wouldn't do it. And I think that trust of what you would do, and giving kids, there were certainly expectations. And, you know, we did not, for 3 years, we didn't even have a television. So there was nothing that you could do. You had to go out and entertain yourself. But I think they just had a trust of, I could have handled it when I was young, so my kids should be able to handle it.
That's really
And
cool. That it's cool that you said trust. I was actually thinking that was the word that stood out to me too, even before you said trust, was that they trusted you. And so maybe that was part of what helped you to trust yourself. Well, if they trust me, then I can trust myself. That's
Yeah.
really
I mean,
great.
they were both my parents were pretty naive about things, about life and about what was going on and how you don't ask questions, you don't question medical people, you don't question the authorities. And that's a common thing from back then, that those people, that generation, didn't expect doctors to do bad things. They didn't expect them to give wrong advice. You know what I mean? They just said, oh, that's what they said, so that's what we need to do. But when I stepped up and said, I don't want to do have things done to me that I don't understand. And I witnessed firsthand, I witnessed firsthand when I was little, and I do remember very distinctly this. I didn't want to stay in the hospital, and they had wanted me to come in for tests for an unknown length of time. They weren't going to fix me, but they wanted a guinea pig, basically. And my parents didn't have insurance, so they were like, sure, bring her in and we'll pay for all her care. And I was sad to leave, and I told my mother, and she said, well, at night, if you get homesick, then you ring for the nurse and she'll come in and read you a bedtime story. And I was like, okay. So the first night I was really sad, and I had like one roommate in the ward that I was in, and I rang the nurse's bell because I thought, I'm feeling sad and I don't like this. And she came and poked her head in and said, what's up? And I said, well, my mother said, if I was homesick, that you would come in and read me a story. And she said, well, your mother lied. And she turned the light off and slammed the door. And that was when I was like, wow, okay, this is what the real world is like. And my parents have no idea that this is what goes on.
And you were like 5 or 6 at the time you
I
said?
was five, yeah.
Wow. And instead of being bitter, I mean, it doesn't sound like you were bitter. You don't seem bitter now. So
No, I just
it's
figured my parents didn't know. And if they did know, they'd be very sad. So I didn't tell them.
Oh, really? How long did you stay in the hospital that time?
Almost 2 weeks until my mother came in one point, and I said, I really want to go home. I don't like it here. And maybe I told her a few things I don't really remember, but I do remember her packing my little Pan Am bag with all my stuff and saying, I'm taking her out. And the nurse was like, she's not supposed to leave yet. My mother said, well, she's mine, not yours. I'm taking her. And that was it. And she took me out.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that your mom did that. I'm sorry you had to experience those things. That's, I mean, as a 5-year-old, as an any year old, that would be difficult, especially as a 5-year-old.
I will say that I have huge aversion to hospitals and doctors. I do not go if I can avoid it. I've had major medical issues where I've said I'm not staying overnight here. I'll come back in the morning if I need surgery, but I'm not sleeping here. But I'm also was a huge advocate when my mother got older and needed care in the hospital, to stand there and demand that they treat her like a human being and be polite to her and give her options. Even if she's old, she has a life that she's been living. You can't just shut it off. And so that was, I don't want to say it was me paying my mother back, because I feel like she gave me a lot and she helped me a lot. But I think that a lot of people, it's unfortunate that our healthcare systems don't provide care for life for elderly people. They assume, oh, you're older, what do you care if you can't walk anymore? Oh, you're older, you've lost your sight because I messed up, and now you are where you are. And it's like, you need to have somebody who will advocate for you
Absolutely.
outside to come in and stand up for you. When you're lying on a gurney and can't speak, they're just going to push you to the side because you're old, and they'd rather take care of the young kid that just came in because they have a life ahead of them. And I don't feel that that's fair.
Yeah. I agree. I love that you were there for her to advocate for her to be her voice when she couldn't be her voice. That's super incredible. It's cool. You use your voice for a lot of things, don't you? For singing, for advocating. That's really fascinating for doing podcasts and getting other people's stories out there. That's very cool. You used your voice when you were 5 to say, "Hold on, my body, my choice." That was before.
Exactly.
That wasn't even a thing. You hadn't heard it anywhere. You so that it should all be credited back to you. Madeline said, "My
Well,
body
maybe.
first,"
I
but she was 5. It's all her. She gets the credit for
mean,
that.
there were hilarious things we did in that hospital that they would make movies about. But you get your gang. And one little girl that was there with me was my roommate. She had a severe eye injury and ended up, I don't know if she passed away, but I think she did. And so then I had to hang out with in the boys' ward, who were a
Oh.
whole lot more fun. And they made race cars out of all the hospital gurneys and stuff. And we'd race down the hallways and smash through the doors and get yelled at by the nurses station and stuff. But, you know, they had no care for kids then. There was not really a place for kids to be hospitalized. It was, you're in a bed, lay there and shut up, you know. And when they, I will say that I got revenge on them through a 5-year-old's mind. They were doing a lot of tests and things on me and bribing me not to tell anybody. And they gave me candy, a huge bag of candy. They kept pointing to it saying, if you finish this up and don't say anything and let us keep doing what we're doing, we'll give you that candy. And I was furious with them. And, you know, I was tiny. I was a very small 5-year-old. And so I kept my mouth shut and I took the candy. And then when I went up to the ward, I was not going to eat that candy because to me, that candy was basically dirty. It was a bribe and I wasn't going to take it. So I went to this little boy, Michael's room. He was by himself. He had a private room. I don't know what he had wrong with him, but he wasn't allowed to eat candy. Now, my guess is he probably had diabetes or something like that. I have no idea. But I went into his room when he was out doing a visit with the doctors, and I hid the candy they gave me everywhere in his room. And then I went up to him when we were having dinner and said, "There's candy in your room. I hid it everywhere. They can't find it all. Just look for it." That was it. It was like my subterfuge for those doctors was to give him candy. And the next day he was gone for a while, but he did come back. So I'm
Oh,
thinking maybe something happened.
I ate too much candy. Oh, man. So what is, I love that you shared that you found fun things to do in your revenge and happy things to do with a 5-year-old. Man, the things that people go through, that's something I'm always fascinated with in the work that I do, that people, I say this to people all the time. They appear to be normal, right? Even I would walk down the street and we would appear to be normal. But if anybody takes 5 minutes to listen to what we have to say, the things that people have overcome, I mean, humans are so incredibly resilient. If you've said anything, you have said that over and over and over and over and over and over, the things that you overcome and how incredibly strong you are. And yes, of course, you have limitations. Everybody has limitations. And you may have been given an extra share of limitations, but you don't care. Like, it doesn't stop you.
It just makes you who you are. I mean, if you dislike yourself, that's your choice to change who you are. But if
Yeah.
you love who you are, you're there because of all the things that happen to you in your life.
Yeah. And how you choose to overcome or get past them. What's your favorite, if like, and I like the ones that pop into your mind. What's like a favorite memory that you have?
From then?
Or anytime. Like maybe it's with your wife. Maybe it's competitively singing. I don't know. Just a favorite memory, something that just makes you just so happy.
I mean, I would say my life is my favorite memory.
Oh, awesome. I love that. My life is my favorite memory. That's beautiful.
Mean, I remember much further back than a lot of people do. So that's a blessing and a curse. I remember when I was going through some d deep depression when I was in my 30s, and I went to a therapist for 5 years. And at one point, I said to her, "I wish I didn't remember all the things. I wish I could not remember them because that would be easier." And it's kind of like that, you know, Spotless Mind movie. It's just like, do you really want to not remember all those things? You don't, because they identify you for who you are. They showcase you at the heights and at the depths of your life. And those are what make a life.
That's interesting. We want to watch a movie about a hero's journey, don't we? We want to watch a movie where somebody has overcome something, but when it comes to us, we don't want that hero. We want the reward of the hero's journey, but we don't want to have to go through all the garbage. And that's a really good point. We often think we want to forget all the bad, but that is often what has helped us to become who we are.
I had a friend that was somebody I worked with a long time ago, and she was going through a divorce and, you know, splitting up her household. And it was a messy divorce with the whole child custody battle and all that. And she and her husband were going through their photos to split up their photos. And he kept saying, "Why are we getting divorced? Look at how happy we are." And she said to him, "Honey, when we're having a fight, no one says, 'Quick, go grab the camera. Let's take a picture.' You don't take those pictures. Those are the things, like, they're there, but the photos you take, you know, those tangible photos are the good times and the intangible are the bad times.
Yeah. And we can learn from both, can't we?
I mean, when I think of childhood and the fun times, because we lived in a little 3-room house and with six of us, and it was we all of us slept in the attic in the winter, and there was ice on the insides of the windows, and we moved all the bedding to the front porch in the summer. And I tell a story that I know Beth loves to hear. My father wanted to do everything himself, and the house was kind of patched together from his summer home when he was a child, and the roof would leak, and he would climb up there with a bucket of hot tar and like patch the hole so the roof wouldn't leak. So as he got older, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, but he still wanted to keep doing all those things, and he was going to go up on the roof to patch a hole in our front porch, which by that time had been closed in. And he said, "Come over here and hold this ladder." And I said, "I'm not holding the ladder for you because you're not going up on that roof." "Well, there's a hole and there's water running into the porch." And I said, "I don't care. You're not going on the roof. We can call somebody to fix that." "No." So he went into one of the barns we had and grabbed an axe and chopped a hole in the floor in the front porch so the water would have someplace to run out. So here we are
Wow.
with our house with a hole about that big in front of the front door to get in the house. So I said to him, "That was not a solution, because now if someone comes in the front door, they're going to step in that hole." So he went and got a hammer and nails and nailed the door shut. He said, "No one will come in the front door now." So
It's okay, I'll just fix it.
that kind of surviving over things is a little bit different than, thinking it through, because that wasn't going to really work. But yeah, we never used that front door again.
That's funny. That reminds me of a place. So we used to live in Stony Point, New York, and there was this house and the front door. It was hilarious. Maybe it was the same. Maybe your dad used to live there. I don't know. It was hilarious because it was probably the bottom of the front door was right here, and and then all the way down was just concrete. Like you couldn't get there. You couldn't get to the front. You could see it. It was this beautiful front door, but there was no way to get to it. And we just every time we drive by it, we're just like, well, I
What
guess
happened
my
there?
visitor's in the front door. Maybe there
That
was a leak on the roof that I didn't
could
see.
have been.
Oh,
And then they chopped a hole in the floor.
remove
Yeah,
it.
you never know.
He's gonna
You never
remove
know
the
the
floor.
story.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on with me today. Gosh, over and over and over and over. So my podcast is stronger than you think, but I feel like you knew you were strong from the beginning.
I think everybody's strong.
See, I think everybody is strong too, but often people don't recognize or realize how strong they are. It almost feels like you knew.
Yeah, I guess I did. I mean, I think that trust thing comes into play, and trusting yourself. And if you weren't trusted as a child, you still have the choice to trust yourself as an adult and understand that the decisions you're making, if you're thinking through them wisely and not just jumping to a decision because I don't want to think about it, I just want to get to the end, you have to take that journey to make a good decision.
Yeah, very true. And I appreciate that you did throw it, I mean, from the beginning, like there was a lot of really hard things. And then you said when I was 30 and I was going through depression, I think sometimes people think if someone's strong, they, or if I'm strong, I always have to be strong. Like there's no wavering. And sometimes people forget that life isn't just this, I mean, it's like Scribble Scrabbles. You know,
It is.
it's
And I find in my experience, because I know this from myself, a lot of strong women, I don't know about men, but a lot of strong women find themselves in abusive relationships because they think they can fix it because they've always been able to do what was right. And suddenly you find yourself in the situation where it's not healthy anymore. And
right.
you
And
just
it's
have
outside of your
everything.
control. Yeah.
Correct. And you have everything. It's so difficult to accept. This isn't going to be something I can fix. I need to take care of myself first and move out of it. And the funny thing is, with the therapist at the time when I was dealing with that, she said, "When did you feel the strongest in your life?" And I said, "When I was 5." So I carried a photo of my 5-year-old self around with me to take care of her wherever I went.
Oh. You were a strong 5-year-old. That's awesome. I know. No, a handful of other really strong 5-year-olds. That's cool. And I love that you remembered that 5-year-old and you honored her and kept her and was like, okay, well, if my 5-year-old can do it, I can do it.
Yep. Basically, she took care of me when she was little, and now I'm an adult. I should be able to take care of her.
That's really neat. And it's okay to hang on to whatever it is that we need to get us through things.
Yeah.
It's okay to have a bad day. It's okay to have a bad month. And it's okay to make a decision that helps you to get healthier and better, even if it's maybe not what you thought in the beginning.
Right. I mean, you may have to start building that world back up from scratch, and it can take, it took me 5 years before I could be okay and to go out and do life again.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. I love that you gave
It's
yourself
not
permission.
something to give up on because it doesn't work in a couple months.
Correct. Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? Oh my gosh, your story is incredible. Excited to hear how you do at your competition, your singing competition.
Yeah.
Please keep me posted and let me know. That's
I
amazing.
will.
And say the name of your podcast again.
It's all creative.
It's all creative. Okay.
And there's a
Awesome.
Facebook group for It's All Creative. So if someone wants to join that Facebook group, I took July off because I've got so many things going on, but I've already got 4 podcast episodes to launch again in August. And usually Mondays, it's just me for like 15 minutes. And then Thursdays, I do a live interview.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll throw links on here, however that works, and we'll put links everywhere for you so that people can keep following your journey. And thank you so much for talking with me today. And it's so fun getting to know you. Like, we didn't know each other when we hopped on, and now I feel like I know you so well, and I love it. I'm just
Yeah,
gonna
I'm gonna
hang
look
out
up your
you're
son.
saying. I know it's gonna be so fun. Well, thank you so much, Madeline. Have an awesome day, and all the best to Beth, that
Thank
people
you.
respond to her and she will just the best dream job ever. That's what I want.
Hopefully, and thanks. It's been great chatting and getting to know you.
Awesome. Have the best day.
Thanks,
I'll
you
see you
too.
later. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.